Welcome to the Speak Like a Leader podcast with John Bates.
Welcome to the show. With me today is someone whom I met through another guest on the show that if you haven't heard her show, you should go listen to it. You'll fall in love with her like I did. Her name's Fiona Merdon. And when I said, Fiona, who's somebody that I should, that I should have on this show, she said, Giles Paley Phillips. And I went and checked him out, and I have chatted with him a little bit, and I think that you're going to be thrilled to meet him. So, Giles, welcome to the show.
John, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. So, Giles is an author, a podcaster. He's published 12 books, including a book called 150 Days, which is about losing his mother, which came out right at the beginning of the pandemic and found a very large and connected audience. And his latest book is A Little Peace of Mind, which is a fiction thriller, if I get that right, Giles. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's and a psychological thriller.
There you go. Psychological thriller. That was the word I was missing. And he does two podcasts. One is called Blank, and the other one is called Things I Forgot Were Good For Me. And we'll have him tell us about all of that. You can find him at Linktree, linktr.ee / Giles Paley Phillips. That's GILESPALEYPHILLIPS 1. And I will put all that in the show notes. So, Giles, welcome to the show. It's great to have you. I would love to know, I want to start out by asking you a little bit about what you feel like you've learned being a dual podcaster and an author about communication. That's maybe something that's not the first thing that people would say who are in, corporate jobs or running startups or things like that. How's that for a question to start with?
That is a great question. I think first off, I think the first thing I've really learned, and it's something I now treasure with regards to doing the podcasts, particularly having, and particularly like this, a long form interview podcast, is how much I've learned about myself and how not alone I feel sometimes when I'm, particularly when I'm in having a difficult moment, for example, if I'm feeling imposter syndrome or failure, or I'm just feeling like I'm not good enough or anything like that, how many people also struggle with those things. And one of the main podcast I work on, Blank, we talk to really high profile people who on the outset look like they've really got things together. They're like really, they're very successful at what they do, and they seem very confident. But doing the podcast, it's given us a chance to really dig a little deeper into these people's lives. And actually, we kind of all find out that we're generally all winging it a little bit. And I don't know about you, when you have those moments when you're talking to people, it's an incredible comfort to have to be able to talk to these people, particularly people that are huge inspirations to you. Now, we've talked to some really amazing people who are, I'm a huge fan of in the worlds of acting and comedy and business and all sorts of things. And it's that reassurance and comfort it brings you to know that you're not alone in those feelings that you have about yourself. And that's been a massive thing for me.
Well, if I can just jump on that train for a minute, I think we have similar experiences from doing somewhat different things. I do a ton of one-on-one coaching with a lot of people who in the business world are like your guests. They're superstars, they're heroes of mine, they've done unbelievable things. And one of the things that I realized a while ago is that I'm totally convinced that everybody who's not a sociopath, everybody suffers from imposter syndrome. And so I decided it's like working with fractions, right? If all the fractions you're working with are over the same denominator, you just divide by that denominator and get rid of it, right? So like, let's just divide by imposter syndrome and toss it out, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's incredible, like I say, how much you learn about yourself and also how other people deal with that as well, and how that you can start to sort of figure out your own kind of negotiations around imposter syndrome in particular. I mean, that's something that absolutely, like the themes on the podcast range from all different things. Imposter syndrome, without shadow of a doubt, comes up every episode.
Uh-huh. So how, I think that's a really interesting thing you just said, how people deal with it, how they make their own peace with it. So what are some of the different ways you've noticed people do that?
Well, it's interesting because they vary so much. You know, it might be that someone will dig a little deeper into what they're doing and push through. Sometimes it's a case of talking to a life coach, you know, getting some professional help with it.
Yeah.
I think actually talking about it with other people and having that empathy around it is also really important and constructive. Yes. I mean, that's the thing that helps me the most, is be able to have those conversations. And the podcast has allowed that as well, me to have those conversations on a regular basis with people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, that's one of the reasons that I am so excited about storytelling and emotional connection and all the things I get to do in my work, is because that's what gets us through as humans. I mean, that's how we do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like you say, storytelling in particular is a really interesting thing. And I always view storytelling as a way of connecting with people, because you can, you know, whether it's through fiction or nonfiction or whatever it might be, anecdotal, you're able to connect with people on a certain level that they will understand and empathize with.
Well, you know, so that kind of makes me think about your book, 150 Days. And I think it's obvious from the testimonials and what people are saying about it, just how deeply you connected with that book. Do you want to say a little bit about that and maybe walk us through some lessons you learned or some things that you discovered with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I started writing the book back in, goodness, about 2012, long time ago. And it's very much a semi-autobiographical story, which I've decided in this particular book to tell through the medium of verse, so through poetry. But it's a bit different in that it's a verse novel, so that it's every poem is kind of interlinked into what could be a prose story as such. So, but it's obviously written slightly differently.
Sorry to interrupt. Have you ever been called an overachiever by anyone? Like, I don't just have one podcast. I have two. I'm not going to just write a novel. I'm going to write a novel in poetry. I think it's a compliment, but I love it.
Not an overachiever as such, but maybe a sense of stupidity or a foolishness. So the story is like, so it's written in verse and it's very much semi-autobiographical. The main crux of the story is based around my experiences of losing my mother, who unfortunately died of leukemia. Now, the protagonist in the story is a teenage boy. I was a bit younger than my mother, younger than that when my mother died. I was around 6 years old. So some of the fictional elements are me as a teenager, as opposed to it being a younger child. But the essence of it is around a boy who is suffering from respiratory issues. So he's had pneumonia and he's seeking help from a physiotherapist, but he's unable to see his mother, who's having chemotherapy. So there's this isolation. He's not allowed to see his mother. He's also having to deal with this sort of being a teenager and an estranged father and a kind of eccentric grandmother who's kind of come into their lives to help out the situation. But it's one of those weird serendipities where the book came out just before we went into lockdown with COVID. And it was apparent very early on that a lot of people were experiencing this themselves, not being able to see loved ones who were hospitalized either with COVID or with other illnesses, and that trauma of isolation. And I mean, lots of people reached out to me saying that they really resonated with the material in the book because it was something that they were experiencing at that moment. And it's just, again, it's one of those funny, strange, weird things that happens in the universe. Sometimes you create a story or whatever, and it actually hits in a point of time where lots of people are suddenly experiencing that very thing that you've written, in more intents and purposes, a fictional world.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I acknowledge you for starting it and finishing it. I mean, obviously you started in 2012. These things are not always easy, and you kept going instead of letting it stop. And hey, like, it came out at the time when it could make the maximum difference for people.
Yeah, it was almost like the universe.
So that's really cool.
Yeah. The universe kind of spoke a little bit with regards to that. I tell you one of the reasons why it took so long, because I think being a very personal story about my experiences, it often meant that I couldn't write it. It was, diving back into those feelings and emotions around that subject meant it was quite hard. I had to sort of take breaks from it from time to time.
Well, so can we talk a little bit about that? Because one of the core things in all the work that I do with clients and in all the training I do is, I actually came up with a term for it and I put a little TM on it. I call it insightful vulnerability. But that comes from something that makes people very, very, very uncomfortable, which is vulnerability,
Yeah.
So, and I noticed that I think people, initially, I think that our programming makes us feel like we're weak if we're vulnerable. It makes us feel like people are going to think less of us if we're vulnerable. All kinds of things like that. And one of the things that I've learned over my lifetime is that those things are typically 180 degrees exactly oppositely wrong.
Yeah.
What's your experience of that?
Yeah, I think, yeah, absolutely. I think it takes, personally, it takes a lot of courage and bravery to admit that you're feeling vulnerable, and actually to go a step further, to write that out down and actually put that out in public is another step, I think. And I think it's something that we need to get better at acknowledging that vulnerability is something that we all experience. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, communicating with one another about various different things, difficult moments, failure, all those things, they're not necessarily bad things. We see them as bad things, we see them as negative things, when actually it's all part of our journeys on this planet and our growth as humans.
Yeah, I think the biggest difficulty comes when it's just so hard that people lose sight of the fact that this too shall pass, right? I think it's sometimes in those depths of depression and difficulty, it's easy to think like, this is it forever, but nothing's it forever, this too shall pass. That's one of the things that has gotten me through some of my most extreme and difficult moments is just reminding myself it's not forever, this is going to things are going to change and, you know, hopefully get better again, but they will change. So I'm going to hang in there for that. You know, the curiosity of what's next was a friend in those times.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's acknowledging that it's just, and I keep using that word acknowledge, but I think it is a case of taking some time to reflect, giving yourself some space, and actually, yes, saying to yourself, this, you know, like you say, this too shall pass. You've probably been through something similar or worse in the past, and actually you got through that and that made you a stronger person. So this will happen again, and it probably will happen again to you in the future. So knowing that these things are part of our journeys.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how you would know this, but when I had a .com company back in the day, and we raised well over $80 million and then went out of business. And it felt like I was going 100 miles an hour and then just landed on my face, you know? And I was so upset and ashamed and angry and hurt and sad and scared and just everything that I almost died of an autoimmune disease. And it's not something that I would wish upon anyone. And that experience, I had to figure out like who I really was and what I was really up to. And I don't think there's any way that I could do the stuff I do today, the way I do it and do it well, if it weren't for that experience. It gave me a level of in touchness and compassion that I just didn't have before, you know, just couldn't have. So I think that's another aspect of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the biggest traumas in my life, obviously losing my mum, and I lost my dad at an early age as well, like that sense of loss. Has certainly given me an abundance of what you say, like compassion, kindness. And I think the biggest thing, which sounds, I say it to some people and they think it's strange, but actually gratitude, actually knowing that I've been through very traumatic experiences and I'm really grateful to A, still be here, but B, to be able to do things that I love to do and that I've been able to fulfill my life in various different ways. And so gratitude is always utmost in my thoughts every day.
You know, you just, and by the way, I just want to acknowledge for everyone that we have a tad of lag here. I think you're in the UK and maybe we're being routed through like heaven knows where. So it's not that we're talking over each other. It's that we have a little bit of a lag and that's just how it is sometimes. So, so forgive me when I talk over you, or it seems like I do, and I totally forgive you. So I don't know if you ever read that book, The Unbearable Lightness of Being. Have you ever heard of that by Milan Kundera?
I know the book, but I haven't read it.
I mean, and it, you know, it's a fabulous book. I mean, it's one of the, I don't even remember anything besides how it changed me emotionally, but that the title, The Unbearable Lightness of Being, you know, when you say all those difficult things that you've gone through and yet it's led to ultimately this gratitude for just being here and the you know, every aspect of the little things you do that enjoy and all that. I mean, that's another thing about grief, I think, is it can feel so heavy and yet there's this unbearable lightness of being, because like it all ends, you know, this is really just performance art. So like nothing's actually all that serious if you, in some sense, if you think about it like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, you know, there's that, the clicking clock, you know, the ticking clock starts to form.
Yeah.
Because you know, you've seen that the time, for example, is so such a precious commodity. You know, we talk about other commodities in the world, but time is like, it's the most sought after one. You know, we worry. It's one and one that we don't worry about enough, and waste. We're very wasteful with it. And I think if you've been through a trauma and you know that, you know that how precious that is, and how that you need to make the most of every single second. That comes back to the gratitude thing, that, you know, actually being able to make the most of these moments we were in, and not worrying too much about what's next, but actually really concentrating on what's happening right now.
So Giles, I'm a total Beatles fan, like kind of utter fanboy. Was it John Lennon who lost his mother, or was it, I think, because John or Paul, one of them, I think, lost his mother early on. Were you aware of that?
I wasn't. But it doesn't surprise me in some respects.
Yeah, right. I mean, let me do a quick Google search, because I think that, I think that one of them, so aside from the death of the uncle who raised him for most of his childhood, Lennon also had to deal with the loss of his mother, Julia. And if you think about one of the most beautiful songs he wrote, it was called Julia.
Yeah.
And God, it's so weird how grief can put such... I didn't think it would hit me like that. A grief can put such beautiful finishing touches on people, you know, if they just don't let it make them angry and bitter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you talk about music, because when I write, music is a big... It's a big inspiration to me. It forms a lot of what I do. Some people that write, they like silence when they write, but I love to pound music out around me when I'm writing. I find it evocative. And it's funny enough, obviously, you know, talking about John Lennon there and that beautiful song, Julia, how evocative just thinking about it is, how the lyrics, you think about the lyrics and the words and how evocative they are. One of the reasons why I wanted to write this book in verse as opposed to just prose was because I wanted to emote. I wanted it to be emotive. I wanted it to be language that really drove the plot, not, you know, heavy prose and stuff. I wanted it to be rhythmical and beautiful.
Finish your thought, and then I'd love to have you read a little bit.
Yeah.
Share a little bit with us.
Yeah, for me, I didn't want the story to be bogged down in lots of description. I wanted to evoke an emotion in people, and that was really important to me. So, yeah.
Mm. So, will you read a little bit to us?
I'd love to.
Awesome.
This one's called "Saying Goodbye."
Okay.
Today I said goodbye to Mum. It started to get cold outside, winter coming around again. It's 1991, I'm hoping for 1992. I'm hoping it will be better. She is going in just for a little while, more treatments. We carry on like normal. She sat on the sofa, dressing gown on, the sun burning a glow on the side of her face. Nana Q was going to walk in with me, walk me to school, even though I'm old enough to walk on my own. But today, they thought Nana Q should go with me. It's time to get going, Mum says. And as I lean down to her, she pulls me in, and I can feel her shaking, uncontrollable shaking. Her grip, it's weak. And she whispers in my ear, and I can't make out what she says. And I ask her to repeat it, but she can't hold back the tears. And as I pull away, I wish I'd asked again. So yeah, that's That's saying goodbye, and that's actually very much what happened when I said goodbye to my mum the last time I saw her. I was a lot younger at the time, but it's still kind of, it's really very, very prominent in my mind.
Well, you know, it really hits me extremely hard because I haven't had as a lot of experience of close people to me dying, but my uncle died of pancreatic cancer, and then my second father, my best friend's dad, died fairly recently of brain cancer, and I don't have a lot of regrets with them, but the one big regret I have in common there is that I didn't have the courage to ask deeper questions, and I didn't have the courage to really talk about what was real. Like, I thought like they would have something against that. Like, what I've realized is that when people are in that place, like, I mean, and actually anytime, I think it's really important for me to remember people can hear anything. They can handle anything as long as you're there and real, you know, about it. And this is really beautiful. It's, I get why people resonated with that, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah. Whew. So, you know, what has the outpouring been like for you for that particular book? Because you were just the recipient of what I've got to imagine is just a lot of raw emotion that of people that were resonating with this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I guess for me, you know, in a kind of selfish way, I was desperate to write this book because it was, you know, it was very cathartic, and as I've sort of touched upon, it was difficult at times to actually write it because, you know, you're churning up a lot of old memories and thoughts and feelings, but at the same time, it was cathartic. It was a necessary thing to me.
Yeah.
It became compulsive actually to get this thing out there.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how I would take, I knew that it would be evocative to some people because, you know, a lot of people are touched by cancer for one thing and loss and grief. And so I was very aware that that would be something and it would be a tangible thing that I'd have to deal with. But it was a very much a beautiful thing. It was, again, going back to communication and having those very raw conversations with people who are having similar experiences themselves. There was something very, very beautiful about that. And again, that coming together. Now, look, we're speaking a few days after the Queen of England has passed away. And
that's right.
What we've seen, particularly here in the UK, has been a coming together of everybody in a sort of national grief. And I think we felt that a little bit around the pandemic, and also, you know, whenever some sort of iconic person passes away, we have those feelings. And I think when someone writes about something like that as well, that there is a coming together. And I think there was something very special about having conversations with people about their own experiences, learning from their own experiences, and that might me being able to sort of further explain my own. It was a very, and again, something I was very grateful to be able to do, you know, because people are very, very honest in those moments. I think when you're going through a period of grief, and you're extremely honest in those moments. And so I felt very privileged to be on the other end of that.
Yeah. I think that you and the Queen of England famous people in a lot of those settings, I think the Queen of England is a vessel for everybody to project themselves into on some level, right? And that they can experience all the grief that much of which may not have to do with her.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's the vessel that can carry all of that grief because of her fame and her position. And a similar thing for you, you know, like you wrote this book and all the people that were touched by it, you get to be a vessel for them and for all of their connected grief. You know, I think it's very, very interesting. And I think it's generous, you know, because clearly you're just a super loving, kind person. And I think I believe that you performed a really important function for a lot of people because you were courageous enough and plowed through and did that, even though it was uncomfortable. And I think that that's one of the things that moves me so much about what I would call insightful vulnerability is it's difficult and it's so generous because it makes such a big difference for people, you know, when you're willing to do that. And it was what you said is something that I've watched happen a lot in the work that I do with my clients. Tell me if this sounds like I'm picking up what you're putting down. When they go to the trouble of looking back over their lives and digging into some of those really difficult moments and figuring out what actually was the lesson and going ahead and processing whatever the grief or the shame or whatever they had to deal with in that moment, when they go back and do that work, number one, they come back with unbelievably powerful, meaningful, useful stories to share. They also come back, I think, just much more solid in who they are and what matters to them. And they discover aspects of themselves that are just beyond inspiring that maybe they weren't so present to before.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And do you know what? I was just thinking there as you were talking about, you know, about vessels and stuff. And I was sort of thinking how creativity and particularly like art is such a brilliant vessel for emotions, and how, you know, what do we do when we feel sad, or, you know, music, for example. You know, I have a huge passion for music and it's my go-to thing. You know, if I'm sad, feeling sad, happy, whatever it might be, you can find something there. Looking at a beautiful painting,
yeah.
reading a book, watching movies, whatever it might be, how those things allow us to really look at ourselves and express ourselves. And one of the reasons why, you know, why I do what I do, you know, I mean, I play music as well. And it, because I want that connection. I want that connection with people on a deeper level. And to be able to, you know, I would say I'm quite an introverted person. So I don't always, you know, I'm not the life and soul of the party, but creativity, and through the things I make, I'm able to connect with people, and that's how I guess that's how I connect with people, is through those mediums. But yeah, I really it just really struck me when you were talking about those that and that is a beautiful word, vessel. There's something very beautiful about that word. I don't know where it's originally came from, but it's a beautiful, you know, there's some words that really hit you, and that really hit me there. So I appreciate you bringing that word into the conversation.
Right on. Glad I did. And I feel the same way about that word in that usage, you know. I totally get what you're saying. And so one of the things I said I was going to ask you, and you've already been so generous, but maybe we can get to a specific, what was one of the low points in your career progression? You know, what was one of those moments when you were tempted to give up or didn't know you would make it by, and what did you do and what did you learn from that?
Well, John, there's been so many. Every time I finish a book, I think it's the end.
That's very interesting. I mean, that's one of the issues of creativity, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I work freelance. I mean, I do lots of different things. And sometimes actually, the reason I do so many different things is because I've probably got to the end of a road on one of them. And I'm thinking, oh man, what am I going to do now? So I need to sort of diversify. And I think a lot of creatives are diversifying now with their work. And that's been great actually, because when I've been put in situations, I'm jumping ahead a little bit to the solution for the failure, really, or the feelings of failure, is when I get to a moment where I think I'm stuck or things aren't progressing the way I want them to, or, you know, nothing's coming good of what I'm currently doing, I try to look for a new route and then try something else. I think whenever I've got into a sticky situation career-wise, I've always tried to find something new to do and push myself into something new. So, for example, the podcast started... I'll go back a little bit further. One of the biggest disappointments I ever had in my early life was playing... I played in a band and we toured a lot. We got to play some big festivals in the UK. Glastonbury was one of them and some other big festivals. And were really...
That's cool.
Yeah, and we were really close to getting a record deal. And one thing and another, it just didn't happen, you know, and the band broke up. And I was absolutely devastated, absolutely devastated, because I'd put all my eggs into that basket. And it was really, really difficult time. And I hadn't progressed in any other forms of my career. I'd really just wanted I wanted to be a rock star. And but it happened that I was writing, I'd written lyrics and stuff in the band, and it happened that one of those things, sometimes you have these kind of eureka moments, that my wife was pregnant, and so I kind of started thinking about whether I could write a story for for our newborn son, and it'd be something that we could do together, you know, reading a story that was my story for him. And that's how my writing started. So it was through a very difficult moment that I discovered something new, and that's happened every time. So that, you know, that happened then, and then I was having trouble with writer's block. I was struggling with a novel, and I started talking to my friend Jim, who's a stand-up comedian. And we were talking about these creative difficulties we were going through. And I said, well, why don't we create a podcast? We could talk to some other people, see if they're having the same things, and we'll maybe get some solutions. And that's how the podcast started. And then more recent. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's one of those things. And so then, you know, and then there'd be something else. And I'm sure there'll be something else coming up that I'll be thinking, oh, no, I need to do something new again. You know, it's just that constant kind of thing. It's having the courage, I think, for me, it's always been having the courage in those moments to try something. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But you never know what those things will lead to. And every time I've tried something new, it's led to something quite magical. And maybe that's luck. That could be luck more than judgment. But hey, if you don't have a go at stuff, you're not going to find out, are you?
Yeah, right. I mean, there's no room for luck if you don't have a go.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. That's awesome. I don't know if you know this, but when I was 20, I ran away to Los Angeles with my rock band, slept in my car on Venice Beach, and
amazing.
Ended up playing in Los Angeles for a couple of years. And then the junkies across the street in Venice Beach finally broke into our apartment and just stole everything but our underwear.
Oh, man.
And everybody else went back home. And I stayed in L.A. and tried to make a go of music and just didn't. Yeah, I loved the guys I played with, but I couldn't find anybody else that I wanted to hang out with like that.
Yeah.
And so I went, you know, back to school, and luckily I was at UCLA, you know, cause I had residency at that point. I went to UCLA and, you know, ended up getting into the internet industry. But one of the things that I think is interesting is how much being in a band can teach you, right? Like, because you kind of like, you learn about performance, you learn about like the show must go on, you learn about making music that has to be well timed and coordinated with like other people. You know, you learn how to play an entire song all the way through instead of just playing the, you know, and then if you make a mistake stopping and starting, you can't do that, you know. And you know, you learn a little bit about business, maybe the hard way. But yeah, it's interesting. Dude, and we never played Glastonbury, I'll tell you that much. That's freaking awesome.
I mean, do you know what the thing I learned the most, John, which has carried me through, is collaboration. I think collaboration's the biggest thing I learned from being in a band, hearing other people's views on stuff. You know, you might not always agree with one another, but it's good to be able to have that, you know, and actually I've always enjoyed collaboration. And I think from doing the band, you know, I've always seen all my creative stuff as collaboration. People say a writer, you write on your own. You get, you know, you once you're going through publishing and working with a publishing company, it's not it's collaboration. You're working with sales teams, you're working with editors, you're working with, you know, all different aspects, the designers. So even writing a book is a collaboration. And I think it's good to be able to, you know, collaboration is a wonderful thing. I mean, we can talk all day about collaboration, but it's something that I really learned from being in a band. I think was the thing that stuck with me, is that joy of collaboration.
Yeah, boy, and it is a joy. And you know, it kind of brings us full circle here. I know we're kind of coming up on the end of our time, but you know, one of the ultimate total key factors for good collaboration is good communication. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, like I say, with all the projects that I've done, you know, I try and find an aspect of collaboration, whether it's doing the podcast, the podcast I work on, I tend to do with other people, whether that be production or actually hosting something, you know, writing. Yeah. I've co-written some screenplays with someone. That again, it's that co-creativity that I really always seek out if I can, because I love that, the aspect of creating stuff with other people.
Yeah. Well, so Giles, you've got two podcasts. One is called, we talked a little bit about, called Blank, which you do with your stand-up comedian friend Jim, and you talk to famous people and go to those places where they blanked out or had some kind of failure, or talk about things like imposter syndrome. Then you also do a podcast called Things I Forgot Were Good For Me, which you do with a doctor friend of yours, a general practitioner, I think. And you talk about things that you forgot were good for you, and even things like failure. I forgot that was good for me. So and people can find you at this Linktree address, which I'll put in the show notes. So is there anything that I didn't ask, or anything that you'd like to say just in the time that we have left?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's been glorious to talk to you, John. I've really enjoyed our time together, and I'm a big fan of what you do, and I appreciate you having me on the podcast. But it's been lovely to be able to talk about these things, you know, that are very dear to me. So it's always nice to be able to talk about that. And, you know, communication, that's been a theme of this particular episode, but it is doing this with you, you know, meeting you and having a communication with new people is always quite exciting to me, you know. That's why I love podcasting, because it gives me the opportunity to just chat with amazing people. So thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. You're super welcome. I mean, that's why I love this too. So it's awesome. All right. Well, you know, please keep us in touch with what you're doing, and I'll definitely look forward to seeing you again. And and I really appreciate you taking the time out to join us and share with us this stuff. I think it's really important. You know, I think a lot of times people draw a distinction between, oh, I'm an entrepreneur, he's a creative, you know. Oh, I'm like a VP at a big organization, and that person's like an author, and there's some difference. I think there's way more similarities than there are differences, and what we can learn from you and your creative process and all that. I just think it's really important. And I think there's a lot that is still available kind of over that pretend fence for, you know, over there with creatives, for people who are executives, you know?
Yeah. And you know what, John, I'd go a step further. Yeah, no, I would go a step further, because I see creative people, freelancers particularly, they are small businesses. You know, you are constantly, you know, you're constantly looking for work, finding work, making work. And, you know, you've got a shop that's online maybe, or it's in person if you're doing events and things like that. So, you know, we are small businesses to a certain extent. So I think there is more of a crossover than a lot of people think. And I think you're right. There isn't so much a distinction. You're over that side and you're over that side. Entrepreneurs are probably some of the most creative people in the world. So I think those two things need to be like interlinked a little bit more than they are sometimes.
Good. Well, we're doing our part here for that. And I thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you, John.
So thank you. Yeah, great to have you. And thank you for listening. We appreciate having you here. Without you, this makes zero difference. And if you like speaklikealeader.show and you'd be willing to share it with some friends who you think would like it, we'd appreciate that. And if you could give us a 5-star rating wherever you get this podcast, that would help us get the word out to more people. And so, Giles, thanks again for joining us today. And thank you all for listening. And please keep us up to date with what you're doing, Giles. We wish you the best.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining the Speak Like a Leader podcast. Go be awesome.